Hey there, welcome to Cageless, a conversation podcast about experiential wisdom and personal hope. I'm Jenny Johnson. I'm a writer, and I'm asking experts, thought leaders, and my friends to share their knowledge and tools on how they found freedom.
Friends, people of the earth, I just want to utilize this moment at the beginning of this episode to say how excited I am. And I know that I say that a lot, but this, my heartbeat is going so fast because I am just absolutely over the moon for the guests that we have today and the topics that we are going to cover. Today, we have Ms. Arlie Pryor, who is a 25-year-old licensed couple and family therapist living in Dallas, Texas. And she is a beautiful, highly sensitive person and a lifelong learner and also one of my very best friends. Hi, Arlie.
Hey, I'm so excited.
Today we are going to cover the topic of something that I feel we have the grounds to be able to cover, which is friendship. So, Arlie, before we dive in, can you give us more, a little bit more background on you for those that don't know you?
Yeah. Well, like you said, I'm Arlie. I live in Dallas, Texas. I see clients, couples, families, teens in Rockwall, Texas, in office. And I see clients in other Texas cities online. I grew up in the DFW area, moved to Austin for school.
Yeah. What a nice little box. I love that it's like, I know everything about you. And we're in like this like little box of like, these are the details that would go like on your like missing persons profile.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if Arlie were missing, this is what you would need to know. Which is ironic because Arlie and I, people who are listening who don't know us, we are known to deep dive into conversations. We both are well versed in the Enneagram, and we talk all of the time about like I'm such a. Which Arlie is? I'm gonna let you take this. What's your number, Arlie?
It's so up for debate. As you know, I feel very fluid between 3 and 4, which almost feels like a very 4 thing to say. I've definitely got like pretty strong 3 tendencies, but I think, and I kind of like was a 3 for a long time. That's what I said I was. And then I read more about kind of those inner wounds and motivations of a 4 and showed it to my mom. And we both were like, that one seems a little more real for you. But right? I just say 3 wing 4, 4 wing 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can be Enneagram fluid because like also I think that there's the conception, there's the idea that like we have all 9 numbers and like just at different points and like different areas in our life we like show up more as the other. But anyway, like Jesus was probably all 9 numbers if I had to guess because he was perfect. Matter of opinion.
Right.
We keep going. Arlie, as a therapist, she is, like I said, we love to deep dive. We love to talk about emotions and feelings and life and things like really deep under the surface. So, Arlie, when did you, I guess, discover this about yourself and like, I want to like make this interest, this part of my personality, my career?
Oh, man. It started really young, actually. Like, I think I was like 8 years old and I watched Sixth Sense and who's the therapist on that movie. For some reason, that really resonated with me. And I was like, I like what he's doing, even though it's not representative of the field at all. But I was like, that feels right. And I remember telling my parents like, hey, I'm going to be a therapist when I grow up. And I was like 8 years old and they were like, no, you won't. That's really hard. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And so I kind of like didn't think about it much. But as you can probably relate to, just being a very sensitive person, being kind of like scared of that for a long time, I think I kind of pushed that down. I was going to go to law school. And then like midway through college, I was like, I have to like stop fighting the inevitable. Like, I can't picture myself doing anything else. So I may as well just take the leap, even though I definitely held that with me, what my parents said, like, that's going to be really hard. And it has been, but it's like the only thing I want to do. So I think that makes it worth it.
I think so too. And we often suppress the parts of ourself that it's like, who would let, like, what would make 8-year-old Arlie like happiest today? And you kind of went in that direction, which a lot of people choose not to do. They choose to listen to the voices of other people or the voices of society or higher education. And like, this isn't super wise. Like, I was actually talking with my uncle today about how it's really difficult, like, as a parent to, like, see your kid go after their, like, passion. Like, be like, are you going to make money and, like, be able to sustain, like, a life like this? But you are really wonderful at what you do. Thanks. And a lot of people don't have that privilege. So how have you, like, kind of navigated that kind of vulnerability with, like, your family?
Oh, man. I think it's been a journey, right, as life always is. But my family's grown a lot, too. I think we've all kind of been on our own kind of path, growing spiritually, individually, together, separately. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, me going into the counseling field, learning kind of some vulnerability there, I think that, as you know, like, when you see people doing the work, you can kind of do it, too. And so not to say I, like, inspired my parents to do that, but my mom has been on her own kind of healing journey. She's inspired me. I've inspired her. So it's kind of cool how that can happen in families.
Isn't it?
It's been kind of seamless, if that kind of answers your question.
It is a crescendo effect. Like, the line of work that you're in isn't like an accident. And like, being able to navigate family, friends, relationships, it's never an accident, mm-hmm. because you are who you surround yourself with. And if you choose to continue to surround yourself with, you know, your family, then like, you know, people are going, you're going to start acting like one another, or like, if there is like positive changes or like really negative changes, you start to like notice that in one another, at least, you know, in my family as well. But in like different relationships, is it hard for you, like, not to, I guess, like, psychoanalyze like everyone, like not just like your mom and dad, but like also like your friends and like relationships? How has that been really hard?
I mean, I would love to tell you it's been hard, but I think that I am pretty decent at shutting off the therapist brain. And I feel like the friends in my life psychoanalyze me a little bit more than I psychoanalyze them. I probably give them good reason to, but no, I don't. I try to be very intentional about not bringing that into the mix. Maybe you can vouch for it. Maybe you can tell me I'm doing too much of therapist brain with you, but I think I'm okay with shutting that off. But I do feel like I'm the one that often needs a little bit of psychoanalyzing sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and that is like such a superpower of yours, is I trust your advice. You do have a background in it, but you never like overexert yourself or like overexert your opinion, like as a friend. What do you think makes like a good relationship? Let's just say relationship, because I want to say like friend or like spouse or like whatever, but like, what, from like a therapist perspective, what is like the formula of a good relationship?
Kind of just a good foundation of respect, fair amount of positivity, like stability, and then I would say like mutual admiration, like admiration for each other, and then also just safety, feeling safe with the person, not physically, but just emotionally, feeling feeling seen.
Yeah.
What would you say?
Man, I was going to say, I kind of already hated myself for asking that question, because that was the hardest question I possibly could have asked. Because people aren't formulas, right?
Yeah, like, well, people, there's so many things.
Right. Yeah. I think I really liked what you were saying about safety. Being vulnerable in this day and age, especially for people who are in their 20s, it's becoming increasingly more difficult, which is ironic, because I think we're in like the era of like authenticity and like airing your dirty laundry. But
the Brené Brown era,
just because like you can like say that you're vulnerable doesn't actually mean that you can be vulnerable, or just because you can exercise it with other people doesn't mean that you can do it yourself. And I have definitely fallen a victim of that. And my therapist asked me a couple of months ago, she's like, who do you have to be vulnerable with? And even though like we can all have amazing friends, I think it's really important to like at least think of like one or two people in your friend group kind of immediately of like, I can show up with them. Like I can fully be myself with them. Do you feel like you have had an easy time with finding those people because of what you already know, or has it been kind of, has it been rocky?
I wouldn't say it's been easy or it's been rocky. It's just taken time. It's taken time. And like, you've taught me a lot about noticing in my body, like how I feel around friends. Like, do I feel drained by this person? Do I feel uplifted by this person? And I think through that process of just like taking stock, I've been able to find those people. But yeah, it takes time. And I don't know, this made me, what you're saying about like almost like an era of vulnerability, but like false vulnerability. I think I found myself doing that in the past where I'm like, no, I'm being vulnerable because I just shared this really big thing. But it's like, that doesn't equate to vulnerability. Like vulnerability is like when it's like hard to share and you're like, it's like with somebody safe. It's not just sharing something to share it, right? And so I think that's like really in the hairs and like a minutia, but like finding the people where I can do that with, where it's like actually vulnerable, has been a process. And then that's just come with learning about myself more and what I need, and also like what I can offer to somebody else too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have to be able to pour back and forth into one another and be able to speak like really candidly with someone and be like, hey, I'm about to share something really vulnerable. Or like sometimes with friends, I don't think that with the community that I've cultivated, that I feel the need to be like, full disclosure, I'm about to show my chest, everything about me to you.
Yeah.
And it does take time. Arlie has been like a really great catalyst for speaking life into reality for me. A couple of months ago, I had a really, really hard friend breakup with someone that I loved and trusted with like everything in me. And we became friends at a pretty young age. And so obviously it's safe to say by the time that you're 26, things change. And everyone has the capability and freedom to do that. But having Arlie be able to be like, this is who you are, and specifically through the, you know, spirituality and like, you know, I don't want to say religious, I want to say our belief system of we believe that we are of inherent worth and value and loved by a divine higher power. And so having a friend like remind you of that, even though like you can feel so shitty and like feel so low with like another person of like, I've changed so much, or like this person has like really hurt me. Am I the one who's like fucking up here?
Oh yeah. I think very similarly to your experience, I've had a couple of those. Some can kind of fade out a little easier than others, and some more similar to maybe your situation, like hit a little harder in the moment. But I'm remembering kind of our conversations around this, and I think what you told me when I was going through this, similarly to what I kind of tried to convey to you, was I think we both asked each other the same question. Am I wrong to change? Am I wrong to grow and need different things and not want this energy around me, right, all the time that hurts me? And like, no, you're not. I think especially, not to bring the Enneagram into it, but I think as fours, we kind of don't really believe that we can just have good things sometimes, but, and that it's okay to evolve and who we're becoming is all right. But yeah, no, I've certainly gone through that too. And it's difficult. I also do think the ages like 18 to 25, 26 is kind of the age of gaining and losing friends. But right, some are harder than others if you've had them for so long. With the one friend I think of specifically, I do wish it could have gone a little differently, but I don't regret growing and allowing, you know, people into my life that I feel bring value to it. And that's the thing too. It's like, if this energetic space between us, if I'm feeling this way, you're feeling this way too. I want her to have a friend that's going to be on her same value system and level too. I want that for her too. And so I think, not to say that all friendship need to have a breakup or like a very clear fade, but I think honing in on that can be important too. It's like, if I'm feeling this way, I can't show up for you well either, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of the concept of like, if you want to break up with a, like, this comes to like romantic relationships. Like, if you want to break up with someone, you're not doing them any justice by like staying together. Even if you're like, oh, like, I don't want to hurt them or ruin the relationship or our whole lives would be, it's like, bro, you're screwing both of each other over. Like, don't you want that other person to be happy? Doesn't the other person, if you love them so much, letting them go make more sense so you can both go be happy and like find the people that are already aligned at this point in your life? And I do think that as someone who is also super highly sensitive, it's really hard to like give yourself permission to grow because you don't want to hurt anyone else. And you know that growing is going to hurt.
Yeah.
And it being someone in your 20s, we're constantly like these snakes that like we keep shedding all of our skin. And it's almost like we need someone to give us permission to be able to do that. And so if I could tell myself anything, even at the beginning of turning from 25 to 26, is like, hey, like, you are allowed to change. We're all capable of change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, there are people that will grow with us. And that's the sweet spot, is finding those people. And not, condemning isn't the right word, but not hating people for not being able to do that, you know, kind of let it, like being open-handed, being able to release, I think is important too. There are people that will grow with you in life. That is the ideal, but not holding it against the people that can't or aren't willing. Right. And other people meet you along the way, like, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hadn't even told the story of how Arlie and I met. We didn't grow up together and we didn't go to college together. We had a mutual friend who got married, and she had known Arlie a lot longer than I had. And I had like heard things about her, obviously good things. And we were both in our friend's wedding party. And it was so funny. We like literally just like gravitated toward each other. Yeah. Like, I think like while we were getting like our hair and makeup done, and it's like, oh, like 2-4s. Like, obviously we're going to like want to chit chat about like movies and life and emotions and things. But I do think that it's important that if you can give yourself the permission to like fill in places that like other people leave in you, the well-being and like longevity of yourself is going to be so much more fulfilled. And being able to say like, well, this person, when I met them at this time in my life, this is who I was. And sometimes those people don't want to see you grow. Yeah. And that's a really hard reality to swallow. It's like, there are people that don't want to see you win. Whether it's subconscious or conscious, they don't want you to be
happy.
There's
grief around that, yeah.
Yeah, and or it's just really uncomfortable. What do you think, like, in terms of change?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would echo exactly what you just said. I think I couldn't have conceptualized that any better. And that's kind of where the breakups, the fallouts, the moving forward, however you want to kind of describe these situations, there's a lot of grief there, right? Because it's like, why couldn't you see me, like, be okay with my growth, watch me grow with me? But I do think there are people that have growth mindsets and people with fixed mindsets, and neither is bad. It's just hard to merge those sometimes. And as you're mentioning the wedding that we met at, I remember meeting you and literally like immediately just being like, Jenny, she's going to go. She's got an open mind. She has lived many lives, right? Like, she's got a growth mindset, and that's somebody I really want to be around. And so, yeah, I'm so grateful. And this is not clinical or anything at all, but the people that get it, and the people that don't get it, don't get it. And just, and that's the way I've simplified it to myself in this era of my life. I'm just like, people that get it. And if they don't get it, I don't need to exasperate myself to get them to understand. Yeah. Right.
No. And I do. I think that the girls who get it and they get it, and the girls that don't, they don't. And if we could just like also apply that mindset to ourselves, if I want to be around people that grow, why can't I let myself grow? Like, why am I so not capable of like allowing? Because when you do, when you view yourself from your friend's perspective, if you can learn to be a friend to yourself, I think that it was Abraham Lincoln who said this, that at the end, he obviously kind of freaking went through it. Anyone who's not American that doesn't know much about Abraham Lincoln, he kind of had a hard time considering he made a lot of change in this country, change, altercation. And he said that, like, if I leave this presidency without having my friends beside me, like people in office beside me, if I get betrayed by everyone when I lay my head down at night, I know that I like had a friend in myself. And when you can be a friend to yourself, you can be a better friend to other people, which, like you said, it just really is about time. And it really is about being able to notice, having the noticing of time and allowing yourself to grow with it.
Yeah. Being a friend to yourself, that's a whole nother concept. It's just, and that's a whole nother lifelong journey that I feel like we all have to go on too, but it makes me think of our patron saint, Glennon Doyle, how she kind of says in her book, she's speaking to her little girl who every night she would tell her, you know, you're always going to have me. I'm always going to be here. And right, that's like pretty comforting in the immediacy, but Glennon realized the most comforting thing I can tell to my daughter is, you'll always have you. And I remember reading that and I just like broke down because I was just like, that is beautiful. And that can be taken a lot of different ways. But in the sense of like being a friend to yourself at the end of the day, that's so important.
Yes. No, I think so too. And I had this epiphany the other day that I think sometimes we all do, whether we want to admit it or not, that like I am going to die. And whenever I do lay my head down at night, you know, maybe one day I'll be married with a husband or my dog or whoever's laying beside me, and I'm going to still die alone. You know, the closest people around you are never going to be inside. And whenever you die, it's like, wait, like this is the one girly that I got not just for life, but for forever.
Right. Like, do I love her? Did I take care of her? Yeah.
Like having that dedication, that marriage, that pact to yourself. First of all, what a freaking waste of time it is to be mean to yourself. And because like I really have ridded myself. Is ridded a verb? I don't know. I just made it a verb. I've ridded myself of people that aren't good friends to themselves and in reflection, not good friends to me. So when you look at the people around you, are those people taking care of themselves? Are they someone that like you would want to like live in their interior if you could? I don't really want to be around people that are abusive to themselves. I don't want to be around people that aren't encouraging to themselves. I don't want to be around people who are mean. And so why would I like put myself in the same sphere as them, I guess. And so cultivating, like we've said, like friends and having that, I guess, perception of like what you want those values to be and someone that you surround yourself with. Which kind of piques the question in me of what does friendship look like in a romantic relationship?
I'm still figuring that one out. Right, romance gets all tricky with all the dopamine, and it's kind of that happiness receptor that you get when you are close in an intimate way, maybe that you probably aren't with your gal pals, right? I do think that those core things need to be present in romantic relationships and quality friendships, but of course they're different. There's more commitment, right, to a person that you are partnered with.
Yeah, that's really tricky with whenever you are on the brink of like losing a friend. It'd be a little bit different if we were like in a romantic relationship. Okay, the next thing that I'm thinking is we're probably going to need to break up, or we're going to need to take a break. But like with friends, yeah, there's not really any protocol with we need to take a friendship break.
Right, right. No, there's tons of books, podcasts, music, counseling for romance, like so much emphasis on romantic relationships and partnerships and marriages, but there's not a lot of airtime for friendships. And for a lot of us, most of us, those are the most like intimate relationship we're going to have. So I do think like what you're saying is so true. There's not a handbook. There's just not one. And right, because people are different, but also that just leaves a lot of just unsettledness, as we both know. Yeah.
Yes. And there is, I have yet to find, and maybe there is, if any listener has like a really great resource on like friendship breakups or like transitioning out of like grief into growth with friendships, let us know, because I want to talk to you. If I could give any like sort of insight, that things do start to get better whenever you can recognize that thoughts don't last forever, even like after a friendship breakup, a friendship fight or whatever. You can move on, just like you're capable of moving on out of a romantic relationship. It is absolutely possible, and good does come. Nothing in my life has left an empty space, and God hasn't filled it with something good. And you are allowed to keep that space open until you find something else good to fill it. It doesn't have to be another friend. It can be a hobby, or it can be a spiritual practice, or it can be an animal, like whatever that is. No one is replaceable. No one is replaceable. And when you can recognize that, like, you did lose something, when someone dies, if a relationship dies, or like if a relationship is put on pause, like you don't have to move on really quick. You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like there's no timeline with, and we hear that with romantic relationships and grief around something a little more tangible, but friendship breakups, losing a friend is huge. And it's kind of one of those ambiguous losses. So giving it, like we both have said, like time, and just trust that space won't go empty, right, forever. And it doesn't mean another person's going to fill that, but something else certainly will. I know that to be true. And yeah, with the one friendship that I have in mind, I didn't feel this immediately after that loss, but I now can really cherish the memories that we do have, that we're good and that we're healthy, right? And so allowing yourself to like have space for that too, I think that losing friends can, and in the same way of how people can handle breakups, can be very rigid, but just honoring what you both had, right? And how it served you for who you were at that moment in time, and being proud of yourself for kind of releasing you both from it when it's gotten to the point where it's not that anymore.
When do you know that it's time to break up with someone?
I think you know it's time when you just don't feel good anymore with them, and you've like had that conversation, kind of tried to push through it, but things are not, that reciprocal commitment is not happening to foster that emotional safety to where, you know, you do both feel supported. I think that's kind of big. I think for me, feeling like I need to prove myself with the people in my life, right? If I feel like I have to come to it with something other than authenticity, that's kind of when I know, like, you know, maybe this is more transactional, or maybe we just don't see each other, you know, anymore. Yeah. What's kind of your pink flags there for knowing when it's time?
Pink flags. I love that. I love that you say transactional, because at the definition, every relationship is transactional. What needs are you mm-hmm. meeting of another person? And whenever a friendship is depleting your needs rather than adding to it, that's like my biggest, like, I will not accept this anymore from mm-hmm. someone in mm-hmm. my life who is taking instead of giving. And also, I think it's important to check yourself too, of just like, what have I been giving in this relationship? And as much as I'm trying not to be a checklist girl, I'm going to have my paper and pen on me at 99% of the functions that I go to, even if mm-hmm. that's like laying down, I'm going to have my pen and paper beside me. But if you can write down and like actually really mm-hmm. cite, just like with like a food diary, let's use that as an example. Say that like you haven't been feeling well and you want to like start tracking down like the foods that you've been eating. You can also track the situation and like the feelings mm-hmm. that you're feeling with someone and kind of come to conclusions yourself, because it's really hard to mm-hmm. argue with something when it's put in ink. And should you still argue with it? Absolutely. But it gives you a little bit more of like, oh, I'm not crazy. Like, oh, these are instances mm-hmm. that have happened and I'm not going to argue with situations. And I also think mm-hmm. that like having a therapist, having someone that you trust to talk to about this, that like might even have like an outside point of view, is also really, mm-hmm. really important. And I don't mm-hmm. know, I hate thinking of depleting myself of good. And any person mm-hmm. on this earth, I think that you should also actively do your best to I almost just said neutralize, like, like nutrition.
Neutralize,
I think that it's, is it neutralize? Yeah. To supplement yourself, like keep adding to like the goodness in your life and take away the factors that are harming you. Why would you not do that? Because like we've been taught in our society that like we are not we are not worthy of good things because we need more. Like we need more skincare. We need more clothing. We need more this fix that's going to make you feel so much better. That's a different mm-hmm. conversation. But if you can take out a factor, especially a friend, someone that like you were saying, like commitment, you can be committed to a like matrimonious marriage mm-hmm. and like a different person, like on a legal level, that's a little bit different. I have no grounds to speak on marriage breakups, but like if you're dating someone or you're friends with someone and they are like actively harming you and not serving any part of your betterment or health, you have permission to leave. You have mm-hmm. permission to shut a book. You have permission to turn off a movie. You have permission mm-hmm. to get out if it's hurting you.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of us can get stuck with, well, you know, I've been friends with this person, or we've been dating for X amount of years. Like, no, I think we all, that person, you, me, we're all worthy of life giving friendships, and those people are out there. And I think believing that can be hard sometimes, but they're out there. And that kind of goes back to the theme of trust. Do you mind if I tell like a quick story?
I want it so bad.
Okay.
Tell it.
Well, this is just coming to mind. It's almost making me emotional. But when I moved back to Dallas from Austin, I had, by the end of my time there, like really cultivated, like four come to mind, but just good friends. And one of them, her name is, we were sitting at Austin East Siders, and I was about to move, and she was so sweet. She just had tears in her eyes, and she was like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you leaving? And I remember just telling her, like, I believe that God, the universe, whoever, you know, you believe in, is going to bring you new people, and we're going to have this connection. It'll look different. I won't live across, you know, town. We'll still have this, but I believe that God will bring you new people. It's not going to look just like our friendship, but it's going to look like y'all's friendship. And lo and behold, she's gained so many friends in the time that right? I mean, she had so many friends to begin with, but she has gained a lot, like, in that space where I kind of, like, left. And, like, I've gained, too. And we still have, I still have very closeness with the friends that I kind of did temporarily have to move away from. But that trust is, like, important. And that goes back to, the, like, what you're saying, too. Just trusting that those people are out there and what you want wants you too, right?
That's so good. Yeah, what you want wants you too. And who you were yesterday is not who you are today. And allowing things to end gracefully, it, I don't know, it just hurts my fingers a lot less when I let go. When you can let go instead of scratching and biting and begging the universe to keep someone in your life or begging that person to stay, not just like circumstance to change. It's just, it's a waste of the precious time that we have here. And I think of Taylor Swift's wonderful song, Time, Wondrous Time, cutting me open and healing me fine. Yeah. In any relationship that you have, there doesn't always have to be a grave. You know, it doesn't have to be. Nothing lasts forever. I hate the phrase best friends forever.
Yeah.
Because putting forever on anything, to me, it feels
so
like
much pressure.
Right? It feels contractual. It feels like, because just time doesn't give accreditation to the value of a relationship. Just because you've known someone your whole life or you've been through a lot of things with someone, that doesn't mean that you have to stick around unless you are married contractually by the government. I can't talk about that because I don't understand it and I don't know.
Yeah.
But maybe one day we will, and then we'll have some wisdom to speak into that. But I do think that you have such a wise point of view in being able to let go, and you're such a great example for that for me. And learning how to like let things go with ease is a daily practice, especially as we are growing and changing in this phase of our life. Which this brings me to our last question. Arlie, it has been amazing to have you on today. And in speaking of like growing, what would you tell your younger self today if you could tell her anything?
Feels really simple, but I think I would just tell her, nothing's wrong with you. Nothing's wrong. You know, everything that you feel is like really too big to carry or to share with people. And kind of that sensitivity that you have and all the things you think about are going to serve you a lot when you grow up. And they're going to be what you'd really like about yourself and what the people that are quality and meant to be in your life are going to like too. I think that's what I would tell. That's what I would tell her.
I love little Arlie. I didn't know her, but I know that she used to ride horses. Can you imagine like our younger selves were friends?
That would have been so amazing. Thank you so much for having me, Jenny. I love talking to you. This was like the best hour of my week.
Ah, yes. And that means a lot because, you know, hours are your therapy session. So was this kind of just a therapy session? I kind of think that it was.
I feel much lighter after this, but I love you. This was the best.
I love you. Okay, Arlie, can you tell our listeners where they can get in contact with you, get in contact with your, I say services, that makes you sound like an FBI agent. You kind of are an FBI agent for emotions.
Yeah. I'm on the website at the practice that I work at. It's rockwallcounselingandwellness.com. You can email me directly at arliepryorcounseling@gmail.com. And then it's agracepryor on all socials.
Please contact her. Please send her a message. And maybe just send us both messages, like email us both, and then we can just start a group email chat. Is that a thing? Do people do group email chat? Did we just get old? I think that I just passed the threshold.
We're aging ourselves.
Of being a young adult into being an adult.
Yeah.
Yes. Guys, thanks for listening to our conversation. Thanks for tuning in. And be a friend to yourself today. Mm-hmm. And go express some gratitude for the good friends that you do have. Mm-hmm. We love you. And we will see you next time on Cageless.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your podcast. It's important because, well, I want to know what you think. You can ask me questions at Cageless Podcast on Instagram or text me at 903-871-5092.